the cult of personality. Dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy, I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality. The cult of personality.
Welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free-thinking historian.
And this is Don, the political science philosopher.
This is Rob, cognitive psychologist and former caveman.
This is Daniel, the treasurer of the UBC Free Thinkers. If you're interested in finding out what events we have, we'll eventually plan, go search Free Thinkers at UBC on Facebook.
Well, that's good to know. So, what's new in science?
A couple quick stories here. The Vancouver Sun reprinted something from Reuters Health this week. The headline was Unhealthy Habits Alter Thinking and Memory Skills. It was a study done over 17 years with over 5,000 subjects in France and the UK. They basically tracked people for a couple of years of their life, asking them when they were 44, when they were 56, and then 61. And they asked them and found out how much they smoked, how much exercise they got, how much fruit and vegetables they ate, how much they drank. And basically what they found is that if you smoke, don't get enough exercise, don't eat enough fruit and vegetables, and interestingly, if you abstain completely from alcohol, this leads to a higher risk of cognitive deficits later in life. And cognitive deficit meaning things like impaired memory, bad verbal skills, unable to do mathematics, reasoning, stuff like that.
So, does it also include like dementia and Alzheimer's?
They controlled for the effects of age, dementia, lifestyle, and socioeconomic status. So they had enough subjects to do it.
So what's about alcohol that has this effect?
I'm not sure. Possibly it's a social effect. If you abstain from alcohol completely, you don't go out to social events where people drink, and then there's some effect that not being social with people has on your cognition. I'm not sure.
I remember listening to a news article about red wine, and there are certain chemicals in red wine which actually they've tied to anti-aging. And one of the things they find is it actually helps the DNA to repair itself. If every time your DNA splits, it kind of shortens a little bit in a sort of weird way.
Yeah, you hear a lot about red wine being good for your health in moderation.
Exactly, that explains, that's given as one of the explanations why French people in particular, or Italians, live longer, even though they tend to have otherwise unhealthy diet with lots of fats and all that. But I wonder if chemical effects like that are at play here.
Probably. I mean, there's obviously some more follow-up on this study needed. It's just that this is such a large-scale study, and it's the first time that anyone's really showed sort of definitively that your lifestyle and your habits and your how much you exercise can actually have a large effect on how well your cognition works. Completely different story. This month, the physicists, a cross-border, cross-cultural team of physicists and chemists, have discovered magnetic monopoles for the first time ever. And magnetic dipoles are the ones you normally think of. They have a north and a south pole, and they stick to each other, and they line up things. Magnetic monopoles are very, very strange and very, very different. They're a magnet with only one pole. And we were discussing before the show, we're not even really sure how that would work.
But I'm trying to picture that in my mind, because, I mean, one of the reasons why you have two poles is because magnetism isn't so much a force as a loop.
Exactly.
Right? It's a circular...
The electrons in a magnetized material line up, and they create a line of force that sort of loops around from one side to the other. Apparently, this idea of a magnetic monopole was theorized and predicted by a physicist, Paul Dirac, way back in 1931. He did some calculations on the laws of electromagnetism and predicted magnetic monopoles at the ends of basically very narrow tubes that carry a magnetic field. And for the longest time, electromagnetics has went along sort of pushing this to the side, ignoring this prediction. Well, this month, published in the Journal of Science, that's right, it's just called Science, so you know it's the real stuff, they found, while testing a crystalline structure of dysporium titanate, it organizes inside, they described it as spin spaghetti. All when it's magnetized, all the electrons inside don't line up perfectly. They create these kind of stringy loops, very narrow tubes that they called spin spaghetti. And when they were firing neutrons at this and applied a magnetic field, it allowed them to dissociate and separate into magnetic monopoles. And so we have confirmation of our theory of electromagnetics that was predicted in the 30s.
Cool. Well, why don't we head on to our main topic? This is actually kind of special. We're doing something of a two-parter here. We'll be looking at cults at long last on Radio Free Thinker. This episode, we're going to focus a bit on what defines a cult, what a cult is, and we have an interview with a good friend of mine who is a cult survivor who's going to talk to us a bit about that. Next week, we'll be tackling the big one, Scientology.
And for legal references, this is all fictional, and we cannot be sued for anything we might say if there are any Scientologist lawyers out there.
And there might be some listening. We have some interviews with Vanonymous and perhaps former high-ranking members of Scientology cult itself.
I think a good place to start all this is when I was doing some research into this, I discovered there's actually kind of two flavors of looking at cults. The historical concept of
chocolate
cults,
and vanilla.
The historical concept of cults actually comes from theology and sociology. And there's sort of a gradient created by Max Weber and has been augmented since. It basically puts at one end churches. And churches essentially are the established, universally accepted, the socially acceptable groups.
Not by us.
Right. And they also tend to have an interesting thing. They tend to be socially very more diverse or more willing for diversity. Again, this depends on where you are, because they are dogmatically or theologically very conformist. So if everyone believes in the same thing, if you have nuns, you can have an order of nuns or an order of monks, and they can kind of do their own thing as long as they all believe in the same. So that's where you have the church. The Anglican, the Roman Catholic.
And they all sort of have larger geographic spread as well. So they can get more people to tie into that sort of larger...
Tend to be. Yeah. Again, it depends on the society you're getting at. A step down from that, or a step sideways perhaps, is sex. I know that's not the X, that's S-E-C-T, but now that I have your attention. Essentially, these groups are believers in the base religion, whatever that might be, but they tend to want to go back to the old ways. They want to go back to some tradition that they feel that they've fallen away from. So you get a lot of things like Methodists. A lot of the Protestant movement wasn't so much to be a different religion, it was to return what they saw as the morphed Catholic Church back to its old thing. So that's where you get cults, sex. After that, you get cults. And now cults are different and similar to sex. Cults believe in all the old stuff, or can believe in all the old stuff, but they think there's something new. They've discovered something new, or there is something in the old ancient ways that everyone has forgotten about, and they're bringing it up. So they tend to be things like Mormons is a good example, where you had the guy discovered a whole new book of the Bible. You know, he wasn't saying that Christianity was wrong.
And the Garden of Eden is somewhere in the United States, and God is a real person that lives on another planet.
Exactly. So sects tend to be a protest against established church. Cults tend to be add-ons to an established church, although, again, not necessarily, but in a theological sense, that's how it works.
And to point out, it wasn't really until the 1970s that you found that the word cult actually got this sort of negative, derogatory connotation.
Yeah, the public didn't really care about cults. It was a sociological phenomenon.
And that brings us up, because everyone right now is sitting there saying, well, you're talking about cults. That's nothing like what I think about cults. And that's true. In common day thinking now, we think of cults, as Ethan mentioned, basically a thing of the late 70s and onward. Tends to be something that we think of as a few people clustered away who have some very weird or unique beliefs. They tend to also be authoritarian. We see them on the outside as exploitative, although they themselves think they're just giving themselves over to whatever cause they have. We also tend to see them as dangerous, as in usually the beliefs that they hold tend to be not so much antithetical to theology, but can be dangerous to society in general. Again, different flavors of cults will push these buttons in different ways. They also tend to have the thing of they tend to revolve around a charismatic leader or an extremist ideology, and usually the ideology is carried by a leader. When we talk next week about Scientology, someone like that would be L. Ron Hubbard. For anyone who remembers Jamestown, there was Jim Jones, who did that with the People's Temple, right? So that's sort of the modern thing. And in that sense comes the biggest thing, is the whole idea of its authoritarian nature, its exploitative nature, and some of the dangers that their beliefs can have to society. And that's really where we're sort of starting off with this talk.
Well, why don't we go to a quick commercial break, and we'll come back with our interview and get a firsthand account of what cults can be like.
Israeli garage band Monotonix left their home country because they were banned in too many venues. They have set themselves on fire, have stolen drinks from the audience, have crowd-dived, have thrown things at the audience, have had shows broken up by police, have broken bones, and have performed on children's TV shows. Now on September 21st, they'll do all of that and more in Vancouver. The Biltmore Cabaret and the Georgia Strait present Monotonix with The Manipulators and MT40. 10 o'clock at the Biltmore Cabaret on Kingsway. Tickets available now.
Okay, and joining us now on Radio Free Thinker, we have a good friend of mine, Carol. And Carol, thanks for joining us on Radio Free Thinker.
Not a problem.
And you had a very interesting experience that's pretty relevant to today's discussion. So could you tell us a little bit about your experience with cults?
I certainly can. Quite a few, actually. I got messed up with a guy in particular, and he went to live with his family, and I decided it would be a good idea to go with him. And it turned out that they were part cult. Actually, they were the ones that were setting it all up and organizing it.
Wow. So what tipped you off that it was a cult?
Actually, it wasn't until after everything was said and done that I realized that that's what I got messed up in. It was all very subtly done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 10 months from to finish, and it wasn't until I was actually back out in the real world that I realized what I'd been through.
And cults are, you know, usually associated with religious or a spiritual message. Was your cult sort of religiously motivated?
They actually named the Seventh-day Adventist. They followed a lot of the Seventh-day Adventist guide, seems like the best word. However, in retrospect, it wasn't necessarily exactly the way Seventh-day Adventists are, because I've actually done a bit of research since to find out. And they, things are definitely different. So it's not, I'm not saying, you know, that's what it is. But they had a firm believing through the Bible that the Antichrist was going to come and force everyone to take a mark. And they did it. They made it all seem real by claiming to be the Seventh-day Adventist and going through the Bible, pointing out all the appropriate parts.
Hmm. So one sort of famous aspect is the coercive persuasion to affect an individual's ability to reason or think critically, make choices. Was this common during your experience?
It was, actually. Every night, pretty much, we would have a family meeting, and we would all get together, and we would discuss what happened throughout the day and what was going to happen the next day, how things could improve. And it didn't seem to matter what I did. They always, it was always wrong, so they were constantly keeping me off kilter. I couldn't seem to do exactly what they wanted, even if I did to the T what they expected me to do from the night before.
And was this common with all members?
I can't speak for all members because, you know, it's just me that's involved in this particular one. I know that with some of the others, they seem to be more accepting of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But they might have been brought into it slightly different than what I was. There was occasionally some larger meetings of everybody as opposed to just the group that I was with. And at those meetings, they did the same type of thing. It was kind of like, this is what the Bible says is going to happen. And then they would take away any arguments anybody might have had.
How many members at one time did the cult have?
The last one, the last major meeting that I showed up to, which I didn't go to them on a regular basis. I felt something wasn't right. I wasn't quite happy with it all.
Mm-hmm.
But the last one I went to, there was probably about 30.
Okay. Did you get the impression that this cult was perhaps very dangerous, or what kind of pushed you away from them?
There wasn't anything that pushed me away. My dad decided to come for a visit. And I guess some warning bells went off to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because one day, he had been there for about 2 days, and finally he just turned to me and he said, "No, when I leave here at the end of the week, you're coming with me. You don't have a choice."
Wow. So, the time you spent with them, did you see them recruiting new members?
Yes.
What sort of people did they target?
Those that don't really have a clear direction in life is a really good target area. Anybody that really, I don't know, I guess has a dependent personality, where they're looking for someone to kind of, quote, take care of them. As far as age goes, there was all kinds of different ages there.
Do you think that when you compare your experience to what you know about cults in general with perhaps Scientology or other cults, do you think they sort of operate on a similar pattern?
Yes, they do, actually. I'm not, this is kind of a generalized, broad statement, but I don't care what church you go to. It's all falls under a cult guideline to me. They're all doing the same thing, whether it be Scientology or any of the other ones. I think Scientology is probably one of the ones that is closer to a cult-like organization. I've done some research, like I said, and then read some articles on Scientology specifically, and some of the stuff that I've read, I can relate directly to some of the stuff that I went through.
Wow. So do you have any suggestions to people who may come into contact with cults or have family members in a cult?
I would love to have some. The thing is if it's they're, quote, recruited the same way I was, they won't know what's happening until it's too late. If something seems to be too good to be true, chances are it is. You have to stop and think about what you're getting into and what's going to happen 2 or 3 months down the road.
Well, that's actually great advice, because most skeptics say that pretty much about any claim out there, whether it's cults or, I don't know, organic food or anything. It's generally speaking, if it sounds too good to be true, there's something fishy going on.
Yes, there is.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us, and we hope that maybe in the future we can talk again.
Not a problem. Anytime.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And we're back. Well, so we had an interview there with my good friend Carol. Thank you so much for doing that, Carol. And she brought up some pretty interesting points there about religion and what cults are.
I found it actually quite interesting, some of the techniques used. I find that a lot of what we consider to be cults use a very similar methodology. Some of the things, it's basically brainwashing, right? Usually you start out by putting people in physical or emotional stressful situations, right? You try and put them, sometimes life has done that for you. Your friend had mentioned about, you know, picking on people who are down and out. I think of people who are homeless and a lot who can fall victim to this, or people who are having broke up with their significant others. So you get people who are someone in distress, that they're in a state of crisis or whatever. Then you sit there and you provide them a simple solution. You say, just believe this, just follow this, just do this. You're offering them a way out of whatever problems they have.
This is the way, this is the path to happiness and joy out of misery.
It's a weird passive aggressiveness too, because these groups also offer, while they're sitting there saying, you know, whatever you've been doing, it's wrong. This way is right and we love you. They offer you, usually tend to offer you unconditional acceptance, unconditional love. You have to conform to them, but they offer you all this positive reinforcement. And the idea is it's Pavlovian, you know, you get a stick when you do things on your own, you get a nice pat on that back when you do something they like to do. This can also be added with classical things, sleep deprivation, malnutrition. I mean, if your body doesn't get the right nutrients, it wears down your resistance, right? It's quite... And then once they do get you, they offer you a new identity, a brand new life, belonging to this great community. And once you're hooked in, then they have another tool they can use, is if you leave, if you try and break away, if you see what's necessarily wrong with the situation, you lose all of this new life you have. You lose all your friends. Shunning is one of the great tools used by a lot of these religious groups.
Well, that's a good point there, Don, because most cults are often defined by the fact that they have punishment for defection or criticism. And that can be physical, it can be mental, it could be someone stalking you, and they don't encourage independent thought. That's the big thing. They isolate you from your friends, your family, and they offer you an easy solution to a complicated problem.
So long as you don't think about it.
Exactly. And that is pretty much the hallmark of pseudoscience right there anyway. Offering a ridiculously great solution to a very complicated problem. We've seen it so many times.
Yeah, simple solutions are seldom simple, and usually they're just fogging the mirrors. Of course, this does lead to an interesting corollary. How is that different from the Pope?
Well, that's a very good question. Is organized religion, in some sense, cultish?
Is there a set of characteristics that defines a cult that is in some way separate from religions?
Well, I have a list here. For example, a central authority in a single charismatic leader.
Check.
Pope. Control over life and death.
Check.
Well, to some degrees, yes and no, right? They can do exorcisms. They can do various things.
They can make massive decrees about how condoms cause AIDS.
Well, yeah, okay, but I'm going to play devil's advocate, no pun intended here. I think one of the things that I have noticed in my own research is that established churches, established religions, although, again, they're very dogmatic about certain beliefs, also tend to promote a certain diversity as far as how you live your life. So you're right, you can't use condoms, but you can perform any job you want, or you can go work whatever you want. Whereas cults tend to be,
seem to be more stringent.
Which is why you have
rules.
This tendency for cults to form communes. They go off to isolate themselves from society in general, whereas a real religion, if I can use that term, tends to not isolate itself, but to proselytize
Vatican.
More.
Well, the other interesting thing is the commission of felonies. Now, the Catholic Church cannot wag its finger at us for that. So I'm just going to gloss over that one. The strict control over the lives of members. Again, you could argue that most religions do this as well.
Oh, especially if you consider something. I mean, maybe the average practitioner, again, see, I'm playing both sides. I do that a lot.
It depends on how fundamentalist the religion is, I think. When you get to the fundamentalist, I guess, chapters of the religion, then it seems like these cultish rules might apply a little more.
Well, not only that, I mean, if you think of monks or nuns, I mean, how much more controlled over life can you get, right? And I mean, you get those in most forms of established religions, be it even Eastern religions. If you think of Buddhism or Confucianism, you get monks in that. And again,
people dramatically altering their lives to fit a perceived notion of how they should live their lives. It's maybe a little bit more voluntary, but there's still some aspect of control there. Another marker of a cult is the polarized worldview. Basically, we're right, everybody else is wrong.
Which really annoys us who are right.
Well, again, most religions have the message, we're right, everyone else is wrong.
Pretty much everyone who has a pretty strong worldview thinks this.
Well, again, everybody thinks this, whether it's politics, religion, music tastes, whatever, right?
Well, then again, yes and no. I mean, I think the clear distinction here is that I have certain views, but they are not unquestionable views. They are views that we can find out, whereas when you get with the religious dogmatic views, they are unquestionable. They are...
Mm-hmm. Well, one other aspect is requiring large financial donations. And again, most big churches do require some donations. It's not quite on the stage of, say, Scientology that requires upwards of $100,000.
So that you can get to the next level.
Yeah, like a World of Warcraft game or something.
I remember reading something recently that it compared some aspects of being a fanboy, of being a Trekkie or someone that, you know, goes to Comic-Con every year, whether they have the money or not, to being in something of a cult. And I've just been thinking of how these characteristics apply.
Or like something like fraternities and sororities.
Exactly.
Well, they have a lot of their origins are very cult-like. Look at the Pythagoreans. But... So it's an interesting debate. I mean, I don't think it's fair to lump all organized religions in with sort of the more sinister, self-destructive cults that kill people. But I do think there's a certain aspect.
There's overlap.
Well, definitely overlap. Yeah.
I think actually, and this is where I'm gonna flag wave my Sam Harris thesis. I think one of the big problems I have with organized religion as we have it here, irrespective of my beliefs of them themselves, is they provide breathing room. So you have said they're the Catholic Church, right? Well, we've noted that a lot of the things that they do are similar things that are done by some of the other cults. And if it's all right for them to do it, it makes it easier for someone else to say it.
Well, we had a really great show here today. Remember to tune in next week for the Scientology segment. And we must assume that our listeners have an opinion on this. So please email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And we have a few announcements to make here.
Well, it's a Skeptic Points. This is the new segment that we've been trying to point out. This is the highlight. This is something that's happening this week or we've read about recently that we think you should be checking out on.
So what's happening this week?
Well, one of the things that I picked up was there are two events going on, and I'll try to make these quick. One is the Open Data and Open Standards and Open Source Seminar. It's being put on by Andrea Rayner about the open government initiatives put on by the city government. It's being held September 9th at 8:30 at Plaza 500 Hotel.
That's tomorrow if you're listening live.
It's free, although they do like you to register. You can register at FIPA@vcnbc.ca. The other point is Boiling Point, which is put on by a couple of CBC personalities, Aaron Cutler and Mo Shahoto, and they're discussing the HST, BC deficit, and the Federal Employment Insurance Act. That's September 10th at Voya. That's 1177 Melville. And that, I think, is just an interesting thing because the HST is a big topic right now in BC.
It's been somewhat polarizing.
What about... anyone else?
Well, I would like to remind our listeners, please check out Café Scientifique, which is on the 15th of September, 7:30 at the Railway Club. Always a great time.
You might want to let our listeners know what they're talking about this month.
I believe it's all about green energy, green technology. So check it out. Be green. And let's see, how about the 20th of September at 7:30? Skeptics in the Pub, always a fantastic time. Come out,
show up,
get drunk.
We'll be there, come meet us, talk people, have some beer.
And of course, if you're a UBC student, you might be interested in some campus activities. Daniel, what's going on with that?
Just search us on Facebook at Freethinkers at UBC, and we'll let you know as soon as we have some events planned.
You can also double check at ubcfreethinkers.blogspot.com if you're not on Facebook.
And I just want to mention again, this Canada-wide copyright consultation has come to pretty much a close. Over 4,000 people responded, overwhelmingly in favor of a moderate fair use doctrine, not in favor of extending copyright lengths, and for DRM-free neutral technologies.
Okay, well, this has been Radio Free Thinker. My name is Ethan. You're a free-thinking historian saying goodnight.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
And this is Rob, the cognitive psychologist, saying see you next week.
And this is Daniel saying this is probably going to be my last episode for a while.
Beautiful country. You know, I rode out here about 50 years ago on a little dun horse and started a film career. Picture called The Big Trail. Well, I made quite a few since then. Some good, some bad. Matter of fact, in those days,
CITR!
Matter of fact, they come in pretty handy anytime. It's kind of nice to know you have something set aside. So if you ever figure on that, remember that
CITR
can be mighty helpful.
Yeah!
Industrial, goth, metal, DJ Drake is back, live and loud on the Vampire's Ball. Friday nights, 2 to 4 a.m., right here on CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.